I appreciate everyone accommodating the earlier shiur time. I just want to make sure we get through as much as we can in terms of the halachas of Rosh Hashanah. I want to try to cover as much as I can in terms of starting from Erev Rosh Hashanah and moving on. We've discussed Slichos a little bit in 10-minute halacha. Maybe we'll have another 10-minute halacha about Slichos. So we're going to leave aside Slichos and just discuss starting from the halachos of Erev Rosh Hashanah and moving forward to Rosh Hashanah itself. So first off, on Erev Rosh Hashanah, the Shulchan Aruch and Simon Tavkuf Pei Aleph, Si'if Beis, Paskins, that... I'll read it to you. It says Shulchan Aruch. That's Tavkuf Pei Beis. Tavkuf Pei Aleph Beis. Noagim Lisanos Erev Rosh Hashanah. There is a minhag to fast on Erev Rosh Hashanah. It is based on a medrash in Vayikra that says that Be'erev Rosh Hashanah Gedolei Ador Misanin Hakadosh Baruch Hu Mevatelem Shlish Mi'avonoseim. That in Erev Rosh Hashanah the Gedolei Hador would fast and Hakadosh Baruch Hu would be mevater on a third of the averos. And Rosh Hashanah VeAdyam Kippur Ma'ichid Misanin Umevatelem Od Shlish. And then between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, certain individuals would fast, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu will forgive another third of the averos. Ubi Yom HaKippurim kulan misanim, v'HaKadosh Baruch Hu omer liYisrael, mada azil, azil mikanu lahalan chushbina. And on Yom Kippur, everyone fasts, and then HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Klal Yisrael, okay, now all averos are wiped away, from here on it's a new cheshbin. Ubi Yom HaKippurim arachag, and then from Yom Kippur until Sukkos, ze osek besukaso, v'ze osek belulavo, this guy goes and builds a sukkah, the other guy, or probably the same guy, hopefully, also goes and gets a lulav, and b'yom tov rishon shel chag kol Yisrael omdin lefnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and then by the time we get to the first night of Sukkos, everyone's standing in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, omer lahem, and he says to them, mada azil azil mikanu lalan chushbina, that whatever's past is behind us, and now we have a new cheshbin. L'kach nemer l'kachtem lachem yom rishon v'chulei. Fine, that is the medrash. So the medrash makes a reference to fasting on Erev Rosh Hashanah. Based on that medrash, the Shulchan Aruch Paskins that it's not only for the Gedolei Adar, but it's for everybody, that everybody, the minhag developed that it goes beyond the Gedolei Adar, that everybody should fast in Erev Rosh Hashanah. Question is, how long should one fast for? So Mishra Brura and Simon Tavkuf Samach Beis Sivkatan Yud writes, quotes a custom to fast until Plaga Mincha. Plaga Mincha is 1 1/4 shows manios before nightfall, before Shkia, let's say. And he also cites a custom to fast until Mincha Gedola. So those are the two customs quoted by the Mishra Brura. Nevertheless, there is a third sheet of the Mishra Brura doesn't quote. And that is the sheet of Rabbi Yaakov Emden. Rabbi Yaakov Emden writes in a tshuva, in Chelek Beis Mekuf Mem Zayin, that you can eat after Chatzos. But this is a legitimate minhag. It's one that a lot of people aren't aware of till they open up a Shulchan Aruch, as with a lot of things in Judaism, that you need to open up a Shulchan Aruch to see what it says that you're supposed to do. But it doesn't seem that there's any reason not to observe this minhag. In Halicha Shlomo, which I was reading through this morning, on page Vav, in footnote number 35, it says that Rabbeinu Hayimizaris Lekayim HaMinhag HaNizkor B'Shulchan Aruch, Rav Shlomo Zalman took this minhag very seriously. And he would fast, but it says, Ad Chatzos Hayom. He would fast until Chatzos. He would not be knowing to go all the way until Plaga Mincha, or all the way until Mincha Gedola, just until Chatzos, or Mincha Gedola at the most, on Erev Rosh Hashanah. That's what he would do. And it says, V'hayatama al eila shabiyacholtom lisanos ve'inam asanim. He used to wonder how there could be people, why there are so many people that are otherwise very religious, pious Jews, who are capable of fasting, and all it is, if you're going only till Chatzos, it's skipping breakfast, which we probably do half the time anyway, and eating lunch, I don't know, 20 minutes later, it's not a big deal. And he wondered why people didn't do this. Sharei halacha mufreshesi, it's a beferish halacha in Shulchan Aruch, that the minhag is to fast on Erev Rosh Hashanah. It doesn't require Hashlama, it doesn't require Kabbalah, no special dinim, you just fast in Erev Rosh Hashanah. Now, in that same footnote in Halicha Shlomo, it mentions what else Rosh Shlomo Zalman was busy with on Erev Rosh Hashanah, and it says that in Erev Rosh Hashanah he used to be involved in giving tzedakah, in whether it be his own money or when other people gave him funds to distribute, he would spend Erev Rosh Hashanah involved in tzedakah, and he would say Tehillim at every spare moment, and he said that when in the house, it says over here that when people in the household, the grandchildren or the children maybe, when they were younger, and he noticed that in Erev Rosh Hashanah they were spending their time with Dvarim Shel Mabekach, with things that aren't really so productive on Erev Rosh Hashanah, he would give them Musar, and he would say, how can you waste these special moments? We're standing right before the Yom HaDin. Erev Rosh Hashanah is a time that you have to try to grab on to every last moment. How could a person not take advantage of every single moment to daven to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in those last few moments. He also, it says over here, it's very common that people wish each other before Rosh Hashanah, not only Ksiva V'Chasima Tova, but they say that this year should be better than last year, or that Tichle Shana V'Kil Lo Seha, right? That's what the Lashon Chazal, when they describe why it is that we read the Tochcha prior to Rosh Hashanah, Tichle Shana V'Kil Lo Seha, let the previous year and all of the curses of the previous year come to an end. So interestingly, in Halicha Shlomo, it says that Rav Shlomo Zalman said that you should be careful not to appear like a Kfuye Tova. A lot of good things happen this year too. So you should realize that you shouldn't only focus on the bad. And when all you say is, oh yeah, let the year and all of its horrible curses end. Well, what about all the wonderful things that happen? You have to have a Karsa Tov to the Baruch Shalom for all the good things also, and not only to focus on the negative. We have to be Modet HaKadosh Baruch Hu on all of the good things as well. And that's why he said, he found it interesting, Rav Shlomo Zalman, when the Luach would come out, when they'd print the calendars, and at the end of the calendar, at the end of the year, they would print at the bottom, Tichla Shana V'Kil Lo Seha. He'd say, that's a pischon pet to the Satan. How do they know? They're printing the calendar a year earlier. So they're already prophesizing that the next year is going to be a year full of klala. He didn't like it at all. He thought that was that al tiftach peh, that you shouldn't tempt the Satan like that and to make it such a terrible year. So that's an important idea just in Hashkafa, to recognize that we shouldn't only focus on the negative. I mean, obviously we spend a lot of time focusing on the negative in terms of tshuva and araveros and bad things that happened and onshim. We should focus on the positive as well. As they say b'shem Rav Dessler, if I could get off of halacha for a second, they say b'shem Rav Dessler that he would recommend that a person sits down with a piece of paper, writes on the top of the piece of paper bad and good, two separate columns, and just tries to think about every bad thing that's happened to him and to Klal Yisrael that year, all the illnesses, all the challenges, all the difficulties, all the tsaros, and write down all the good things that happened to him and to Klal Yisrael that year. The simchas and the births and the weddings and the wonderful things and the hatzlacha and the chesed and all the good things that have happened over the course of that year. Then Rav Dessler would say, okay, put the pen down, take a look at that piece of paper. You are looking at the list that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wrote exactly 1 year ago. And you keep that in mind as you approach the Yom Noraim. It keeps, puts things in perspective a little bit about how serious these times are. But he didn't just say write a list of bad. It was important to focus on the good as well, and to have Hodat HaKadosh Baruch Hu for all of the good as well. Furthermore, in Erev Rosh Hashanah, the Shulchan Aruch in Simen Tavkov Pei Aleph, Se'if Dalid writes that Mechabsin was stopping Erev Rosh Hashanah, but then the Rama says, not only do you bathe and take a haircut, Yeshnagin litbol be'erev Rosh Hashanah mishum keri, that the minhag is that people go to the mikvah on Erev Rosh Hashanah for tumas keri, and that seems to have become a pretty widespread minhag Yisrael to go to the mikvah on Erev Rosh Hashanah. The Mishnah Berurah over there in Sivkat and Chavav says that if you can't go to the mikvah, you should at least pour 9 kav of water over yourself, which means a shower. You take a shower, and that's even 9 kavan of mayim shuvin as a bidiyevet if you can't go to the mikvah. How much is 9 kavan of mayim shuvin? It's not a particularly long shower. It doesn't have to be the longest shower in the world in order to get 9 kavan of mayim shuvin. Yeah.
It has to be cold?
I don't think so.
Should it be regular water?
Yeah, water. If you're using mayim, again, l'charchili, you should go to the mikvah. If you can't, so 9 kavan of mayim shuvin. Now, a mikvah for a nida has to be a kosher mikvah with all the chumras and everything else. A mikvah for a guy who's just going for Tosefes Kedusha or whatever, for keri, before Rosh Hashanah, it could be a swimming pool. So if you have a friend with a heated pool and no one's going to be around or whatever, and there's going to be ample privacy, so you don't have to, there's no chiyuv to go into the mikvah to share everyone else's sweat and whatever, and it's okay to go to cleaner locations also. I remember when I was a child, my father used to take us to the mikvah, to the beach, to Atlantic Beach. It was freezing and dangerous. Like, usually he wouldn't let me go. We'd get there, he'd be like, you can't go into that water, and only he would go. So, if worse comes to worse, we'd be stuck there. I don't know, but but you can go, but the beach would also be okay, whatever, now this weather is probably not even so bad by the beach, except there are probably people there. So anyway, but that's the minhag quoted in Shulchan Aruch. Mishnah Berurah says that you should not go before 1 hour before Chatzos. Now, that does not seem to have caught on as a very widespread minhag. Most of the communities, they open up the mikveh very early in the morning to let people come right away early in the morning, and people try to be the first one there, so before everyone, before the crowds get there. But really, as a lechatchila, if you can go to your swimming pool or to the beach within an hour before chatzos, or later, then that's the lechatchila de gedin, that's what the Mishnah Berurah quotes. The Rama also says, Yesh mekomos nagin lele chala kvaros. There's also a minute to go by the base of kvaros to go to the cemetery on Erev Rosh Hashanah and laharbos sham betchinos v'nosim tzedakah la'aniyim, and to daven at the base of kvaros, and also to give tzedakah la'aniyim. Now it's to and that's what we mentioned before. Shlomo Zalman Auerbach tried to be makbid to give tzedakah all day on Erev Rosh Hashanah as much as he could. But the way the Ramah sounds like is that you're supposed to give tzedakah dafka in the Beis HaKvaros. So you're actually supposed to do the tzedakah, I guess, as a tzedakah tatzel mimavis type of thing. You should give tzedakah before the and the Mishnah Berurah says before you even say the tchinos, you should give tzedakah when you get to the Beis HaKvaros. In the Sefer Nitte Gavriel, he says it's a pelish lo noagin kain. He's never seen people actually give tzedakah when they go to the Beis HaKvaros. It's mefurish in the Ramah. He doesn't understand why they don't do that. But to visit Kivrei Avos, Kivrei Tzadikim, maybe the Mishnah Berurah points out that when you're doing this, you should be very careful, though, that you have in mind that you're davening to the Ribbono Shel Olam in the merit, in the zechus of whichever dead people it is that you're visiting, whichever kvaros it is, but not to daven to the dead people themselves. That's something that we have to be very careful about. Sometimes people don't realize they go to visit kvarim and they start davening to tzaddikim. We don't daven to tzaddikim. We daven to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This is the issue we haven't yet discussed, but we contend with in terms of slichos. This morning's pizmon, for instance, starts out with the words, what was it? Mechnisi Rachim? Malachi Rachamim, right? Malachi Rachamim. So it was the whole pizmon really is phrased as a tefillah to the Malachim. But if you skip the first paragraph, then it's not as obvious that it's a tefillah to the Malachim. It makes it sound like just Ulai Yirachem, maybe Hashem will have Rachmanos on us, without it being addressed to the Malachim. So many poskim have a serious problem with praying to Malachim on any level. So the Mishnah Berurah says similarly, you shouldn't pray to dead people. You have to be very careful that you're praying to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. However, there are many poskim that say that you're allowed to pray for someone to intercede to HaKadosh Baruch Hu on your behalf. That there are poskim that allow that. If you take a look in Shuvas Minchas Yitzchak, Chelchas Simen Nun Gimel, based on Gemara in Sota, Daflam Dalaran, based on Gemara in Brachas, Yudchasan, based with Kalev. So it does seem to indicate that there are poskim at least that hold that you can use it as long as you understand that you're not praying to the tzaddik to answer your tefillos, you're praying to the tzaddik or to the malach to bring your tefillos. So there are poskim that hold that it's mutter. The minhag in this yeshiva, certainly based on the Pesach of Rav Willig, is that we don't do that. We skip Machnisei Rachamim, we skip Malachi Rachamim, because we don't dive into any intermediaries. A couple of things to remember if you are going to find yourself in a cemetery on Erev Rosh Hashanah as a kiyum of this minhag. The Shulchan Aruch and Aruch Chaim Simen Chav Gimel Sif Aleph says that you should make sure to tuck in your tzitzis so it's not loig l'rush when you're at a cemetery. It shouldn't be a mockery to the dead people that you have your tzitzis hanging out while you're at the cemetery. Furthermore, the Shulchan Aruch and Simen Reish Chav Dalet Sif Yud Beis says that if you haven't seen a cemetery for 30 days, excluding the day that you were last there and the day that you were there now, meaning if a 30-day time period has passed since you've last been to a cemetery, you should make a bracha, asher yatzar eschem yidin, v'nemen atalach yosmeisim. This is a nusach of a bracha that you make when you go to a cemetery and you haven't been there in a while. Furthermore, according to the Gemara in Horios, Daf Yud Gimel and Beis, Daf Yomi will be there in not so long from now, a person should not read the matzevos, because that could lead to shichcha, that when you read the matzevos in the cemetery, it could lead to shichcha. However, many of the achronim say that that's only true when the letters are bolate, when the letters protrude out from the matzeva. But nowadays, they're engraved into most of the matzevos. The way they make them is that the letters are engraved, and for some reason, al pi kabbalah, they say apparently that does not lead to shichcha. Right? A lot of times, you go to the cemetery, there are people that. Historians that just love to do this. They love to go to old Jewish cemeteries and read the kvarim and see, you know, who's buried there, and, you know, try to figure out as much as you can. Sometimes you could tell a lot by a gravestone. In the Emden Eibschitz fight between Rabbi Yaakov Emden and Eibschitz, there was a Dr. Schnell Lyman has a whole talk on what the gravestone of Rabbi Yonis and Eibschitz's wife may have indicated about his beliefs. Tremendous insight. Just so you can learn a lot from reading something. I was once walking in the cemetery with my my uncle, Julius Berman, and we saw a grave that said, "Here lies Julius Berman." So someone said to him, his son said to him, "Dad, you make an appointment?" And he said, "No, but I'm afraid someone else made one for me." So technically, I think typically we're pretty makel with these things. Washing hands also, Shulchan Aruch and Simin Dalet of Yudches says that you should wash your hands three times before you go into your house after you've left the cemetery. That's why right at the outside of the cemetery they usually have a washing station where you could wash your hands three times. Or if you didn't, then when you get back home, you should have someone bring water out, because that's the minhag, that we wash three times before we enter the house after leaving the cemetery. Furthermore, on Erev Rosh Hashanah, Shari Tshuva in Sivkat and Gimel cites a custom to do Ataras Nedarim on Erev Rosh Hashanah. This is based on the Gemara Maseches Nedarim that says that when a person violates a neder, ba'avon nedarim banim mesim k'shem ketanim, that because of the sins of nedarim, people's children die young. So it's a very, very serious curse for someone who violates nedarim, and it tells you a little bit about the severity of nedarim. So before we face our Yom HaDin, we want to get rid of those things that could be most damaging to us on the Yom HaDin, so we get rid of our nedarim. Who can serve on a Beis Din for Ataras Nedarim? So the halacha is three males over the age of Bar Mitzvah can be the Beis Din. They are allowed to be related to each other. They are also allowed to be related to the person seeking Hatara. That is Mutter. But ideally, unless you're very rushed, because of issues of Trei Kali L'Mishtami and other issues, it's best that one person be Matir. One person seek Hatara at a time. And you sometimes see people are in a rush, so what they'll do is they'll have three and three. They'll get a group of six people, and three guys will say at one time, and then the other three guys will say back. It's actually not just something that you're saying. You're actually supposed to be entreating the Beis Din, asking them to be Mati Yer Neder, and then they're supposed to respond to you that we are being Mati Yer Neder. So really, ideally, unless it's a real Shasat Chak, a person should go one at a time to be Mati Yer Neder. The Shoel has to understand what he is saying. The person who is asking for that Torah needs to understand the words. If he doesn't speak Hebrew, he should say it in English. Unlike the minhag in many places where you just break your teeth and clearly, having no clue what people are saying, they sometimes just sit there mispronouncing the words for 15 minutes, right? That's not appropriate. And what's best is that you know what you're saying, not just best, required, that you know what you're saying, you know exactly what you're asking. Chaya Adam points this out, better to say B'lashon Laz in whatever language that you speak, rather than to say it in Hebrew if you don't understand it. It's not like Kriya Shema or Kriya Satorah, where we do it in Hebrew, and even if you don't understand it, you're still Yotze to some level. It's about understanding it. It's more like Bittul Chametz, where if you don't understand what you're doing with Bittul Chametz, so then it's not called a Bittul Chametz. You haven't actually been Vatal, you just said some line from your Machzar. So that's how Ataras Nedarim works as well. For which Nedarim does the Hatara actually help? So in the Siddur Derech HaChayim, the Nesivus HaSiddur, he says that any Neder you remember making, you actually have to specify. The standard text is not sufficient for a Neder that you remember. If you don't remember Nedarim and you assume that they're a Nedarim that you've made along the way that you don't have a recollection of, so that's where you rely on this basic text that covers everything. But if you do remember, you're supposed to be Mefarit exactly what the Neder is. I think we had recently, was it here in my shul, someone wanted to be Matir Neder for something, so we had to tell him, make sure you're Mefarit, make sure you say exactly what it is that your Neder was in order that they could be Matir it directly. The Shulchan Aruch in Yerodea, Simin Reish Yud Aleph Siv Beis, says that the declaration where we make at the end, where we annul all future Nedarim, doesn't work for Nedarim that you make even though you remember having annulled them at the time of the vow. Meaning, if I say, I'm hereby annulling any future Nedar I'm going to make this year, and then in a month from now, I remember that I said that on Rosh Hashanah, but anyway, I take another Nedar. So that's not, the annulment definitely doesn't work for that, because I'm remembering that I wanted to annul it, and I take it anyway, so I show that I'm overpowering that annulment. I'm saying that I'm ignoring that annulment, and you should listen to what I'm saying now instead. If a person wants his hatara to work for his wife as well, then he has to say so. He has to say v'chein l'ishti. A husband can be matir nidrei ishto, but he's got to say that that's what he's doing, and that he's not just looking for his own nedarim. I think in Halicha Shlomo said Rav Shlomo Zalman didn't think that was necessary to be matir nidrei ishto. I think the minhag is most people don't do it. Most people don't say v'chein l'ishti. Every once in a while you hear a guy that will say it. On Erev Rosh Hashanah, the Ramban Sim Tavkuf Pei Aleph, Siv Gimel says that we do not blow shofar in Erev Rosh Hashanah. Two reasons, quoted in the Mishnah Berurah over there, Siv Katan Chav Dalid. Number one is to separate between the tkios of Chiyuv and tkios of Minag, right? That throughout Chodesh El, it's a Minag to blow the shofar, but the Chiyuv of Midah Raisa of Tkiyah Shofar is only in Rosh Hashanah. In order to distinguish between them, we have a day of break in between them to make it very evident. And the other is the more famous reason that we're taught when we're in kindergarten is to confuse the Satan. The Satan won't get it. He'll think, oh, Rosh Hashanah has passed, or whatever it means. Definitely doesn't mean what it sounds like it means, but whatever it means, that the Satan will in some way be confused by us not blowing the shofar on Erev Rosh Hashanah. Nafkamina would be if you're just practicing. So if it's an idea of confusing the Satan, so any tekios will make it evident that you're still in the season, that you're still working on it. But if it's to separate between the tekios of Chiyuv and the tekios of Rishus, so as long as you're not practicing during davening, so then it's obvious that that out of context that Lechora would be a good enough separation. Yeah.
What's the difference between a neder and a shmur? Like, do they work?
Right. So that's, I mean, two mesechtas. There's a big difference in terms of how they. But you do say in the text that you're trying to be matter everything, right? How should one dress for Rosh Hashanah? So the Medrash in Vayikra, Parsha Lamed, contrasts someone who faces a court and wears dark clothing because looks depressed because he knows that there's impending doom, that he's in trouble because this is his life is at stake, and contrasts that with Klal Yisrael on the eve of Rosh Hashanah, where we're supposed to exude a sense of confidence. We're supposed to exude a sense that everything is going to work out well and that we're going to prevail in din, and therefore we wear white clothing and shave and cut our fingernails and make sure that we look our best. It's not the minhag used to be, not like it is now, that when people were actually faced life and death sentences, they wouldn't buy their nicest Armani suit. You know, nowadays that's the way people dress when they're, you know, when they're going to be convicted and sent to jail and wear an orange suit for the next X amount of years. But it used to be the minhag is that people would look depressed and whatever. Now, and Chazal therefore contrasted that with the way we look in Rosh Hashanah, where we go in with a sense of confidence. We go in cautiously optimistic, right? I guess that's the best terminology. We're not closing our eyes, and we're not taking it as a joke. We understand how serious it is, but we go in with a sense of cautious optimism. And therefore, Shulchan Aruch says that's why we do all these things in Erev Rosh Hashanah, shaving. The Shulchan Aruch quotes them. Of course, you're going to shave, and you're going to. No, it's not so. Of course, one might think that if you're so nervous that you're not going to get involved and do any of these things. Okay, that is Erev Rosh Hashanah. What about Rosh Hashanah itself? So we discussed the other day Simanim. Let me just give a quick recap without all the details. Shulchan Aruch and Tavkuf Pei Gimel Sif Aleph says that you're supposed to eat foods that are symbolic of abundant blessing in the new year. There are two categories of that kind of food. Number one is any food whose name is associated with bracha. Ruvia sheyir bezuchu yosenu, karti sheyichrusu sonenu, silka sheyistalku oivenu, tamri sheyitamu sonenu, kara sheyikra gzardinenu v'yikru l'fanech zuchu yosenu. Each of those, the name is associated with bracha. Not the quality of the food per se, but the name of the food is associated with bracha. What do we say? We had leeks and dates and beets and right, what?
Squash
and yeah, I forget already. You look in the.
You have all of them.
Yeah. they sell them in like a separate plate. You could buy them on a pre-prepared and separate thing with each and with the hiratzons. Jews figured out a way to make money on everything. You know, they could charge $25 for a plate of. You know, we figured it all out. I think it's right next to the little B'dikas Chametz packets where you can buy the little stale pieces of bread. Okay, so anyway, so that's and the Shulchan Aruch also says that you should eat the head of a ram to symbolize that we should be for a head and not for a tail, and to commemorate the Ayil Shel Yitzchak. Mishnah Berurah points out that foods that have names of significance in any language should be used. Doesn't only have to be in Hebrew. It could be in anything, right? We gave examples in the past. Fine. But a food whose nature, the second type of category is a food, it's not that the name means something, but that the nature of the food is symbolic of bracha. The Rama says that, the Rama adds this category, Shulchan Aruch doesn't talk about this, but the Rama says, that's why you have honey. You dip the apple in the honey because that's a sweet year, that's to represent sweetness. Not because the name honey represents sweetness, but because the nature of honey. Pomegranates, the name Rimon doesn't mean anything, but the nature of it is that it's full of full of seeds, like a Jew is full of mitzvos. That we're Malay mitzvos kareem, and it's lashon the Chazal use that a Jew is full of mitzvos like a pomegranate. It doesn't necessarily mean that a pomegranate has 613 seeds. I would not recommend counting, although there is someone that apparently did a study where he counted. Whatever his findings were, it's irrelevant. You say Yehiratzon, Shulchan Aruch says you should say Yehiratzon with each and every food. Mishabura quotes from the Shlach Kaddish that when you say this passage, you should have kavana to pray for what you're asking for and try to be inspired by feelings of tshuva. If you're just making a joke out of the whole process and it's just, you know, so you're probably better off skipping the whole ritual. The whole point is to be ma'orer kavanos of actual tefillah. The brach on the fruit is said immediately before eating. The Yehiratzon is said after you take the first bite, because you don't want to make a hefsik between the bracha and the eating. The Rama says we don't, many have the custom not to eat nuts because it's almost the same gematria as chet. The Maisa Rav says not to eat grapes because according to one account that's what Adam Rishon ate from the Eitz Hadas, which is on Rosh Hashanah. Fruits of the Zayin Minim, though, we should realize that there are halachos of brachos over here. There are dinim of which brachos come first and which don't. So those of the Zayin Minim come before other fruits. So therefore, many people have a minhag where they eat the apple and the honey first. It's really not correct, because an apple doesn't come before a pomegranate. Right? It's not so before a date. An apple doesn't come before those minim.
What? Better.
If it's chaviv, I don't know. How much... I guess you like the honey better. You don't like the apple better. You know what I'm saying? it's the honey that you really. What?
And don't you do hamotzi first anyway?
Oh yeah, you do hamotzi first anyway. Yeah, I'm
but
saying.
I'm
talking about once
eating.
Oh yeah, even though you did hamotzi first, you still make a brachas in these fruits. These are not dvar mabah machmas hasuda.
Okay.
So you still make a brachas anenin. Now some ask, well, why don't we just make the bracha on these fruits before hamotzi? Before we even wash, so that because you don't want to get into the suffix of bracha achrona. So in order to avoid any issue of bracha achrona, we do the hamotzi first. In Halicha Shlomo, on page Yud Beis, he says that ba'achilas ha'simana b'lal rosh shana l'simana tava, when you eat yesh la'aktum l'varich ala tamar, o ala rimon k'shein lo tamar, that you need to eat the date or the pomegranate first before anything else, because it's one of the shivas aminim, shenishtapch ben Eretz Yisrael, that Eretz Yisrael is praised with. And he also writes that you eat after hamotzi, even though if you would eat it between Kiddush and the Su'uda, it's not a hefsik, it wouldn't be a problem of a hefsik of Kiddush Makom Su'uda problem, still it's not appropriate to get involved in a bracha achrona situation prior to the Su'uda. So that's what he writes. And he says this is not like what Tosos and Bracha says on Daf Mem Beis Amud Aleph, where he says that when we don't, that which we don't make a bar pri adama on the Marar, on the night of Pesach, is Mishum Dekivan Derachmana Kave Chova. Once the Torah makes it a chiyuv, because the pasuk says Al Matzos Morom Yochlu, it therefore is like a Dvarim Arigil Lava Machmas Suuda. It's like something that's part of the Suuda, which is therefore covered by the bread. This is not the same, says Rosh Shlomo Zalman. Over here, you would need a separate bracha rishona on these items. The shiny hasam shegam mitzaradin zman achilasa hu betoch hasuda davka. Because over there, the halacha is not just that you're supposed to eat the maror, but that you're supposed to eat the maror davka during the seuda. It's al matzos maror, matzah first, then maror. It's davka in that order. So you're supposed to have it during the seuda, as opposed to over here, the inyan is to eat it. The inyan is not really to eat it during the seuda. So the fact that there's a minag, even if you say the minag rises to the level of chiyuv, it doesn't make it a davar abba machmas ha-su'udah just because there's a minag to eat it, because the minag is not necessarily, doesn't mandate that you eat it during the su'uda, unlike marar, where the chiyuv mandates that you actually have it during the su'uda. And he says that a lot of people eat the apple and the honey first, but that is totally incorrect, that you should not do that. We should eat the tamarim first. And he says this is the ha'ara of Rav Yosef Chaim Zonnenfeld, is quoted in the Luach Eretz Yisrael. And he says, "Imeina rotz l'shanos min haminag hakadum." If you're attached to your family minag of eating the apple and the honey first, lo yaniach peros mizayin aminim al shulchan ad achar sheyavarich al ha'tepuach. So at the very least, don't bring out the other fruits until you've made the bracha on the apple and the honey. Because if you have the other fruits on the table, the Ikra Adin is really supposed to make a bracha on the Zayin Minim before. So if you leave them in the kitchen and then make the bracha on the apple and the honey in the dining room, then you could bring out the others, and that would be a possible way where we could be Mekayim that minhag. if you can't eat certain foods, as we said, for health reasons or because you're disgusted by them, the Kaf HaChaim says it's sufficient to have them on the table. As we pointed out, that was the discrepancy between the two Gemaras of what the issue is. Is the issue of lemichli or lemichzi? Is it to eat it or just to see it, just to have it in front of you? So certainly as a b'di'eved, it's okay to have it in front of you. In Halicha Shlomo, he also says, if you're benching, once we're talking about the Suda, when you're benching on the night of Rosh Hashanah, if you forget Yalav Yavo, he says you should repeat benching again if you forget Yalav Yavo on the night of Rosh Hashanah. Even though, he says, when it comes to the Suda of the daytime of Rosh Hashanah, the Mata Ephraim and the Mishnah Berurah and Kuf Pechesiv Kot Yates have quote Machlokas Achronim, if you forget Yalav Yavo, whether you repeat benching. What's the rule? Whenever you forget Yalav Yavo, do you repeat benching or do you not? It always depends on whether this was a Suda that you were chayiv to have, that you needed to have. If it's Suda that you were chayiv to have, then you need to repeat benching. If it's Suda that you weren't chayiv to have, then you don't need to repeat benching. So during the daytime of Rosh Hashanah, there are achronim that hold that it's mutter to fast on Rosh Hashanah, and therefore there's a machlokas achronim that maybe even if you are not fasting, you're eating, maybe it's not called that you have a chiyuv to eat, and maybe therefore you would not have to repeat benching if you forget Yalav Yavo. But that's only during the daytime. During the nighttime, for sure there's no inyan to fast on Rosh Hashanah. He says in the footnote over here, in footnote number 87 in the Halicha Shlomo, that Rav Shlomo Zalman said that Shekamaduma Shaminig Lachso Gam Shach Yalav Yav B'Suda Sayom, that he thinks the minig has become that we anyway repeat benching even during the daytime. Because since we don't fast in Rosh Hashanah, it's Ki'ilu we're saying we hold that you're not supposed to fast in Rosh Hashanah. So if we hold that way, we hold that you're supposed to eat, that there's a mitzvah to eat, so then you would not, if you hold that it's a mitzvah to eat, then you would repeat benching if you forgot Yalav Yavo. Yes, a whole discussion over here. The Chai Yadim quotes in the name of Hagon Rav Avli Pasvaler. I don't know who this is, but he quotes from major Talmud Chacham that if a person forgets on the night in the Tefillah of Rosh Hashanah and he says Hakel HaKadosh and doesn't say Hamelech HaKadosh, that he's Eino Chozer, that he doesn't have to go back because it just has the din of the same din as the night of Rosh Chodesh. So he has a whole diyun over here, all back and forth in the Achronim, whether that's true or not. It's not so pashut at all that that's the case, that it just has a status of a regular Rosh Chodesh Tefillah. That's not so pashut at all. Okay, moving on. So now we've gotten through the night of Rosh Hashanah. Now we move on to Rosh Hashanah Day. We'll get to Tekiah Shofar later. I want to save that for last. That's obviously the biggest topic. Tashlich, the Rama writes that there is a minhag to go to a body of water and say the pasuk v'sashlich b'mitzulus yam kol chatosenu. If a person can't make it to the water, so he should try to stand at a place where at least you could see the water from that place. I remember when we were in Karen B'Avna, they would take us out of the Beis Medrash in front. We had like a 20-minute break or whatever. I don't know. No, that's not true. In Yom Kippur, we had like a 20-minute break. But on Rosh Hashanah, they would take us out in front of the Beis Medrash, and they would say, "You see those buildings over there, off in the distance?" We'd say, "Yeah." They would say, "Well, before they were built, you used to be able to see water on the other side of that." Say Tashlich. So that was okay. You do your best. You try to get to a body of water if you can. If you can't, you can't. But you try to say Tashlich at a body of water. That's the minhag. Why? So the Mishnah Berurah says that it's to commemorate Avraham Avinu walking up until his neck in water to perform the Akedah. A lot of things we do in Rosh Hashanah are Akedah related, right? That's the Shofar Shalayil. The Gemara says we use Shofar Shalayil as a zecher to the Akedah as well. The Akedah, the Mesiris Nefesh, is a zchus that stands for us even Bizman Hazeh. So that's what we try to commemorate the Akedah. Additional details of Tashlich, a couple of small things. The Mishnah Berurah says that the water should have fish in it to symbolize that we shouldn't be subject to Ayin Hara. The Gemara says in a couple of places in Shas that fish don't have V'yidgularov, B'karavaretz, that fish aren't subject to Ayin Hara. Rav Aaron Kahn once said in YU in a Musar Shmuz that he remembers he was learning in the Beis Medrash when he was a Bachar, and Rav Yerucham Gorelik, Zichrono Livracha, came running into the Beis Medrash and grabbed him by the lapels and he said, "I got it! I figured it out!" And he said, "What, Rebbe? What did you figure out?" He says, "I figured out why fish don't have an Ayin Hara. It's because of refraction. If the light hits the water at a certain angle, where you see the fish is really, the light bends, the water bends the rays of light. Where you see the fish is really not there. So when you're looking at the fish, you're not looking at the fish. So it can't be subject to Ayin Hara." Okay, I don't know if that's the pshat or if something else is the pshat, but a fish is not subject to Ayin Hara. So we go to the water in order to symbolize, hopefully water with fish, ideally, in order to symbolize this idea. Many have the minhag, based on Kabbalistic sources, to shake out our clothing with the intention that just as we're shaking out the clothing of whatever crumbs we have or whatever garbage, we also hope to shake our souls free of any sin. The idea of throwing bread in the water is not really recorded in Poskim in a positive way, at least. It's quoted in more recent Poskim in a more negative way, and the issues of halachic problems of feeding animals on Shabbos and Yontif come up, but whatever, so it's that seems to be a minhag of much more recent vintage and not really part of the minhag of Tashlich. The Aruch HaShulchan, Sim Tavkov Pei Gimel, Siv Dalid, goes on a rant about Tashlich, and he says that what's happened in many communities, which I guess is the natural thing, is that everyone just goes to Tashlich together. They announce, you know, we're all going to go to Tashlich, whatever, after Mincha, and everyone, or before Mincha, whatever it is, and everyone goes at the same time, and it's the men, the women, the teenagers, and it becomes a big, big social scene. And the Aruch HaShulchan said that this is an old problem, and therefore, women shouldn't go to Tashlich. And if women do go to Tashlich, men shouldn't go to Tashlich. He says that it's inappropriate in Rosh Hashanah to create a big social scene. He's probably, this is something that, obviously, if the whole symbolism of it is to get rid of our averos, like the Hasidim used to have a minhag, and I think maybe they still do that, they always go with the Rebbe to Tashlich, because they always want to chap the Rebbe's averos, because what's an avera for the Rebbe is a mitzvah for me, so they want to catch the Rebbe's averos. But that's what they do, seriously. But the idea is we're trying to get rid of averos, so when we try to get rid of averos, you don't want my averos. But when we try to get rid of averos, so it would be inappropriate, obviously, to pick up new ones. As we mentioned the other day, people stay away from egozim because egos has the gematria of chait. We should also stay away from actual chait on Rosh Hashanah. It's always appropriate. Tashlich should be done, the poskim say, based on sources in Kabbalah, that the ideal time for Tashlich is right after Mincha on the first day of Yontif. If a person thinks that he won't have time after Mincha, he can go before Mincha. He could also go during Aseres Yemei Tshuva. If you drive on the Belt Parkway at any point during Aseres Yemei Tshuva, right off the Verrazano Bridge, you'll see, streams of people, saying Tashlich over there. So that's also all fine. Now, in Shulchan Aruch, it really only says to say this pasuk, V'sashlich v'msilz yam kal chatzasad. If you open up your machzor, the Tashlich is like 50 pages. It just goes on and on. There's a lot of Kabbalistic tefillos that were added into Tashlich. That's not the Ikar Minhag. Again, there's a lot of stuff that goes on Al-Pi Kabbalah associated with Tashlich. So again, depending on what kind of background you're from, if you're more into the Kabbalistic customs or less into the Kabbalistic customs, how many of those tefillos you actually want to say. But make sure you say the Pasuk. That's the point. That you're supposed to at least say over the Pasuk. Sleeping on Rosh Hashanah. The Ramah writes that it's customary not to sleep during the day of Rosh Hashanah. Yerushalmi says, "Man did damich pereish shasa, damich mazale." Someone who's sleepy at the beginning of the year on Rosh Hashanah, so his mazal, he's going to have a sleepy mazal. So when does that start? When does that end? Mishnah Berurah quotes from the Arizal that after Chatzos and the completion of the Tekios, then it's already over. Then you can go to sleep already. So when exactly aren't you sleeping during davening? What's that all about? So some posts can point out. I think Rav Shachter used to always point out that if the minhag is not to sleep during the day on Rosh Hashanah L'chor, that should start from Alos HaShachar, or at the very least Netzachamah, at the very latest by sunrise. So it would mean that you'd have to wake up really early to be Mekayim that minhag properly. So especially if you can rely on the Arizal, to take a nap in the afternoon. So what did you do? So then, what did you do already? So obviously it would be best to wake up early. Now in Halicha Shlomo, he says that afal pi sha'amru man de damach bere shasa damach mazale lo nagu lahashke mishum kach kodem alos ha-shachar on Netzachama. He says the minhag Yisrael is not that way. We don't wake up so early. We don't wake up before alos ha-shachar on Netzachama. And he says because we rely the kol she'yashin kedarko b'chol yom hareze nimshach achar shinas alayla. Interesting svara that whenever you're just continuing a sleep that was going on from before, it's considered just a continuation of the nighttime sleep. It's not considered like a brand new sleep. V'lo amru ala b'shochiv lishon l'chadchil b'yom. The whole din is not to go to sleep on Rosh Hashanah. It's not a din not to sleep on Rosh Hashanah. It's a din not to go, or minhag, not to go to sleep on Rosh Hashanah. So if you just sleep straight through, right, so then even though it's past Netzachama, that would be okay according to Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach. Now, the Mat Ephraim says that this Yerushalmi is misunderstood a little bit. He says it's not really about sleeping. When it says you can have a sleepy mazel, and when you're sleeping, it means that if you act in your tefillos like you're half asleep. that you're not treating the day with the proper seriousness and the proper intensity. Mata Ephraim says, that's what it means. So then your muzzle, which means the malach that's melitzalav b'shamayim, the malach that's supposed to stand in your defense up in shamayim, is also, he's going to not prepare his notes, you know, as an attorney, he's not going to come prepared to court. He's also going to be like he's sleepwalking through the whole process. That's the ikker, not so much about the sleeping per se. Rav Shlomo Zalman said that when it comes to the sleeping, he says it's just like sukkah. Just like when, let's say, a person goes inside because it's raining, so they sleep inside at night because it was raining in the middle of the night, so they went inside their house to go to sleep. And then it stops raining. So do they have to set some sort of alarm clock that's connected to a rain sensor that as soon as it stops raining, they're going to wake up? Or if you see, let's say, someone else in your house that's sleeping and it has stopped raining and you know it stopped raining, should you wake him up and send him out into the sukkah because it stopped raining? So the assumption is no. That even after Alos HaShachar Netzachama, even when it's no longer nighttime per se, so you can't even say it's the nighttime sleep anymore, still, as long as it's a continuation of that original sleep, it's considered that nimshach achar alayla. So Shlomo Zalman said the same thing is true with this minhag of not sleeping on Rosh Hashanah day. And he goes on to say that if someone needs to sleep in order to have proper kavanas in their tefillah, for those who daven properly on Rosh Hashanah, very often it's a very draining experience. It's emotionally draining and it's physically draining. You're standing a lot, you're intense for a long period of time, and you could feel physically drained, you could feel exhausted from tefillah. So if you need to sleep for that, so Shlomo Zalman thinks that there's no problem whatsoever with sleeping on Rosh Hashanah if that's the primary kavana with the sleeping, because his understanding was that the idea is not to go to sleep just stomp to sleep, but if you're going as part of your Avodas Hashem, like the Rambam writes in Hilchos Deos, what is it, in the third parak of Hilchos Deos, where the Rambam says that everything you do could really be Avodas Hashem, as long as you're doing it for the right kavanos, your eating, your business, your sleep, everything could really be Avodas Hashem if you have the proper kavanos. So then this becomes part of Avodas Hashem. So Shlomo Zalman can't imagine that something that's a mitzvah for you, it becomes a mitzvah for you. Can't imagine that something that's a mitzvah for you could be the wrong thing to do. That could be something that's us. So if that's what your real kavana is, so then it's a mitzvah for you, so then it's not going to be the wrong thing to do. He also just records a lot of the minhagim of Shlomo Zalman, says that by each of the su'udos in Rosh Hashanah, there are four su'udos in total in Rosh Hashanah, he would learn a different parak of Maseches Rosh Hashanah in Mishnayis with whoever was at the table, and he would explain it just very clearly, Pashup Shat, Mishnayis. It's a nice minhag that he would do. And the Shabbosos leading up to Rosh Hashanah, as was his minhag throughout the year, he would take out a Mishnah Berurah and learn halachos of Rosh Hashanah in the Mishnah Berurah leading up to Rosh Hashanah. Okay, you need to know your crowd. You need to know your crowd, what you can, but ideally it's a beautiful minhag. There is a minhag on the second night of Rosh Hashanah that we say Shechianu. Let me be clear about this. There's a machlokas haposkim whether the 2 days of Rosh Hashanah are considered one long day, a Yom Arichta, or they're considered two separate kedushos. Nafkamina between whether it's one long day or whether two separate kedushos is whether you need a new Shechianu on the second day. Is a Shechianu, you say, on the first night enough to cover you for the second day of Rosh Hashanah as well, or you say that no, you're going to need a new Shechianu on the second day. So what do we do? If we have a suffix, we're not sure what the din is. So in order to avoid that suffix, Shulchan Aruch and Zim Tafresh Sif Beis says that a person should say Shechianu during Kiddush, and because you're not sure if you really need that Shechianu, so wear a new suit or have a new fruit that would require Shechianu available immediately after Kiddush, and have kavana that the Shechianu you say in the Kiddush should also go on the new suit / new fruit, right? And that way you will you have nothing to worry about in terms of bracha levatala. Now, strictly speaking, therefore, the person making the Kiddush should make the bracha. Everyone else is yotzei with him. And there's no reason for everybody to make their own Shechianu. Everyone's yotzei with the person making the bracha, and therefore he's the only one that really needs to eat the new fruit. But for whatever reason, the minhag has developed that people like to make their own Shechianu on new fruit afterwards, or on a new suit, or whatever it is. People like these exotic fruits, which, as we discover every year in Rosh Hashanah, there's a reason people don't eat them the rest of the year. Most of them taste disgusting. But anyway, so people like to make their own Shechianu. But really, the Ikar minhag is that the person who's making Kiddush is the one who's supposed to be doing that. If you eat a kazayis of the fruit, then it should require l'chora, a bracha achrona. Because really the fruit should be eaten, l'chachila, It should be eaten right after Kiddush, even before the Suda, right before you wash, because the whole point is you're saying the Shechianu in your Kiddush. So how much of a hefsek you can have between the Shechianu and actually eating the new fruit? You want it to be as soon after as possible. That's what it says here in Halicha Shlomo on page Tes Zayin, footnote number 91. It says Rabbeinu Tam in Apriya Chadosh Miyad Liachar Kiddush Kodum Nitil Sudai Masuda Kedei Lasmicha LeBircha Shechianu. He wanted to put it as close as possible to the Kiddush, and therefore he would make the bracha on the new fruit prior to the washing for the challah. And he told people that that even though the halacha technically is when you have bread and fruit in front of you on the table, the hilchos brachos demands that you make a bracha on the bread before the fruit, but he thinks that the concern of putting the Shechianu closer to the fruit is enough of a concern to upend that other halacha of the seder of the brachos. However, Shlomo Zalman is also careful not to eat a full shear, not to eat a shear that's going to require a bracha achrona, so that he would stay out of any bracha achrona issues. But again, other people sitting at the table make or adin don't really need to eat anything, so they certainly don't need to eat between the kiddush and the hamotzi. The real ikar idea of the Shechianu, again, as we said, is primarily for the person who made Kiddush. Okay, those are the miscellaneous halachas of Rosh Hashanah. Now let's get to the primary mitzvah of Rosh Hashanah, which of course is the mitzvah d'oraisa of Tkiyas Shofar. So before Tkiyas Shofar, right before Tkiyas Shofar, many shuls have a custom to take a short break prior to Tkiyas Shofar, and there are halachic sources, fairly early halachic sources, that discuss this minhag, but there are two halachic problems that could arise from this. Number one is the Torah is still out. It has not yet been put away in the Aron. In the Shulchan Aruch Paskins and Aruch Chaim Simkuf Mem Tes, that a tzibur is not allowed to leave the shul while the Torah is still out in the shul. But in our davening, we don't put away the Torah until after the first 30 kolos. So what do you do about the Torah? How could everyone leave the shul to go make a bracha, to go make a kiddush and have a little something to eat? So in Rav Sturmbach, in his tshuvas, in Chelek Beis, Simon Reish Ayin Zayin, he says you should cover the Torah with a talis and leave a minion of men behind. And the rest of the shul could then leave. As long as a minion stays and the Torah is covered with a talis. So in a lot of places where they do this, they cover the Torah with the talis, but they don't leave the minion behind. It's probably best to leave a minion behind, that you shouldn't abandon the Sefer Torah. I remember when I was in Karen B'Avna, everyone would go out for the Kiddush, except for the Posek of the Yeshiva. The Posek of the Yeshiva stayed behind. If he's staying behind, who paskin this halacha that everyone's allowed to go out? I wasn't sure. I never had the chutzpah to ask. But anyway, so that's ideal. Ideally, if there's such a place, you should make sure that there's a minion left behind. The second problem is making kiddush itself. Mishnah Berurah in Siman Tafresh Sadi Beis of Kantas Vav says that you're not allowed to be koveya su'uda before tkiya shofar. The chiyuv to make kiddush sets in right away when you complete shachris. So you can't eat without making kiddush, but you can't be koveya suda either. So what are you supposed to do? You can't be koveya, and you need kiddush makom suda. If you're going to make kiddush, it's got to be kiddush makom suda. So it's a catch 22. There's nothing you could do. Since a person makes kiddush, he has a requirement of kiddush makom suda. So he can't, but he can't be koveya suda. So the solution some suggest is not to make kiddush then. Rather, if you're worried about fasting past chatzos or whatever, so if you're worried about something like that, then you don't want to fast past chatzos, so better to have a drink of coffee in the morning before the chiv of kiddush sets in, and then for sure you're not going to be fasting anymore, and that would be okay. A woman who's weak from fasting, or it's very difficult for her to go a long time without eating, could recite Kiddush and eat before Tkiyas Shofar, because she's not really chayiv in Shofar. Right? The whole idea that we're not allowed to be koveya suda before Shofar is because we have a mitzvah that's incumbent upon us. A woman, although women are makbid, Rabbi Kivega writes in Tshuvas that Nashmat is the Siman Aleph, that women have already shavi alai uchova, they treated this like a chiyuv already, and they go out of their way to make sure they hear Tkiyas Shofar, but they're not really chayiv in Tkiyas Shofar. And as such, if they need to, they can certainly make kiddush and eat a little something before Tkiyas Shofar. In Halicha Shlomo, says Shlomo Zalman had a very interesting minhag. When he got older and it was difficult for him to go without eating for that long, so here's what he would do. He would listen, stay in shul for the brachos of the shofar and the first 30 kolos. Then he would go make kiddush and eat something, and then he would go to a different shul. And again, that was lagging behind the first shul a little bit, and pick up with them from the brachos and the first 30 kolos and daven the rest of davening with them. What was the svara? So Svara was that Mi'ikar HaDin, really you're supposed to have 30 kolos, right? That's the Mi'ikar HaDin, that's what you really need to hear. So the Yisra being Kovei Asuda is not going to be Shayach once you've already had 30 kolos. Elamai, the tekiyos to Miyushav and the tekiyos to Mu'umad should be juxtaposed with each other because the bracha goes on all of them. So you should have the bracha that goes on all those tekiyos together. So if he leaves after 30 kolos, he's not getting all the tekiyos back on that bracha. So he'd go to the second shul where he'll hear another bracha that will then go on tekiyos to Miyushav and tekiyos to Mu'umad all together. Right? And that way, you won't have the problem of his tekiyos during Shemona Esrei being divorced from the bracha, being separated from the bracha. That was his. So some people asked him, but wait a second, if you were already Yotze the first 30 kolos, so isn't the first 30 kolos in the next shul that you go to going to be a hefsek for you? Because you're already Yotze, so it's not really going to be mitzvah. They said, no, for everyone else they need it. And you could argue that there's some tzad to be machmir, that even for those 30 kolos that you should try to put them together with all the other kolos. So it's doing a mitzvah din. There's a reason to want to do it this way. And therefore he didn't think that it was going to be a problem of a hefsek whatsoever for himself. So that was Rav Shlomo Zalman's minog when he got older. But again, you see the trouble that he went through in order to make sure not to compromise any of the halachas. I think in yeshivas, this is someone pointed out recently, one of the Baal Batim Mashul, Gavri Butler, pointed out to me, he said this is one of the unique halachas where the minog is to be more makel in yeshivas than we are in shuls. It's very rare that you have that. The minog in yeshivas is that everyone's makel, and in shuls people are not so makel with this. They don't want davening to go till 3 in the afternoon. That's why they don't. And also because yeshivas daven longer, it's much more difficult to go fasting that whole time. The brachos on the tekiyah shofar, before you blow the shofar, the Baal Tokeah makes the bracha lishmoa kol shofar and shechianu. So let's take the first bracha lishmoa kol shofar. Why not litkoa b'shofar? Why lishmoa? Mishabura tafkuf pehe sivkat dalit says the mitzvah is to hear the shofar, not to blow the shofar. And therefore, if a person blows the shofar but he can't hear it, he isn't yotze. The mitzvah is the shmia. So that's why the bracha is formulated in that way. Why lishmoa kol shofar, not lishmoa bi kol shofar? So the Mishnah Berurah says that if it said bi kol shofar with a bays, that would sound like you're listening to a command that the shofar is giving to you, as if the shofar is, you know, it's like a Morse code that you're listening to a message, but that's not really what it is. You're supposed to hear the sound of the shofar, and that's supposed to be ma'ori you in whatever way. But it's not about words that are coming out of the shofar. So that's why it's lishmoa kol shofar. There is a minhag in many shuls, they make a big deal out of announcing, do not say Baruch Hu, Baruch Shemo, and Amen to the brachos, because you don't want it to be a just Amen. You don't say Baruch Hu, Baruch Shemo to the brachos, because you don't want it to be a hefsik in the bracha itself. So the Mishnah Berurah, Kuf Chav Dalet, Siv Katan Chav Alef, quotes in the name of the Dog Mervava, not to say Baruch Hu, Baruch Shemo during the brachos on the shofar, because of the issue of a hefsik. There's a big question about saying Baruch Hu, Baruch Shemo in general. We had a 10-minute halacha shir on that once, about when you should and should not say the Minhag Gra, was not to say it in any place where it would be a problem to be mafsik, any place that you're not allowed to talk, to not say Baruch Hu, Baruch Shemo, even though it's a minhag that the Torah quotes B'Shem, his father, the Rush, that whenever he heard the Shem Hashem, he said Baruch Hu, Baruch Shemo. Still, it may not be enough of a, based on the pasuk Yishem Hashem Yikra V'Godol Elokeinu, but still, it may not be enough of a reason to say Baruch Hu, Baruch Shemo in a place where you can't be mafsik. Now, in the Tshuvas Maram Shik, Simen Nun Aleph, he says that some people don't have a problem with it, that they think Baruch Hu, Baruch Shemo has become such, it's part of the kiyum of the bracha already, that since it's learned from the same pasuk Yishem Hashem Yikra V'Godol Elokeinu, it's all part of the same kiyum, and he doesn't think that it's a problem. Rav Sternbach points out that if you do say it, forgetting about whether it's a hefsik, you know, you're being mafsik, you're not being mafsik, it's likely that the mevarech is not pausing to let you say Baruch Hu, Baruch Shemo. He's just saying the bracha straight. So if you do say Baruch Hu, Baruch Shemo, you're likely going to miss a couple of words of the bracha, and that you're definitely not allowed to do. You're definitely not allowed to miss words of the bracha. So Rav Sternbach says that even if you hold that it's not a problem of a hefsek, unless the guy is pausing for you, it would be a problem anyway to answer Baruch Hu, Baruch Shemo. Amen, there's no doubt that you do answer Amen. Now there were those that were machmir not to answer Baruch Hu, Baruch Shemo throughout Musaf to anything. It says in Elich Shlomo, Rav Shlomo Zalman got upset by that. He, when they announced that in Shul, he would say it anyway. quietly, not to insult anybody, but he would say it anyway. He would still say Baruch Hu, Baruch Shemo during Musaf. He didn't think that there was any reason to go that far, to be so machmir, not to say Baruch Hu, Baruch Shemo. If you're making the bracha for someone else, it's important that the listener and the blower have in mind that the brachas count for everyone, right? So when you're listening to the brachas, you have to have in mind for you, the guy who's making the brachas having in mind, and they usually announce that in shul, they give a clap, and they tell you not to speak between now and the end of Musaf, the last skills of the end of Musaf, because the bracha really goes in everything. And they tell you not to say Baruch Hu Baruch Shemo, and they say to have Kavana with the brachos. Those are usually the three announcements that they make before Tchiyah Shofar. It's interesting, the not speaking part is probably the least pashut of all of them. Because why can't I speak before the last 40 kolos that are just there to add to the number 100? I mean, that's not even... I already had Tchiyah Shofar, Yushuf, Tchiyah Shofar, Umar, I had all the Chiyuvim already. Malchus, Sechon, Shofar, everything's done already. It's just the last few that they want to blow just to be mashal the number. Not so partial, but anyway, Rav Moshe was asked. Rav Moshe has a tshuva where someone asked him, if you're going to make that announcement in shul and everyone's going to talk anyway, so do you say Mutav Shiyushogig in Valium Mazidin? Better not to make the announcement that everyone will be Bishogig rather than Bemazid, be in violation. So Rav Moshe says, when do you say Mutav Shiyushogig in Valium Mazidin? Should you say, let's never give any halacha shiurim? This way, no one will ever know the halacha, and it'll be Mutav Shiyushogig in Valium Mazidin. No, you can never say something like that. If there's a chance anybody's going to listen, then you don't say Mutav Shiyushogig. It's only when you're 100% sure that whoever you're talking to is definitely not going to listen. But if anyone in the room is going to listen, you don't say Mutav Shiyushogig Va'Ali Mazid. And furthermore, Moshe says, very interesting, he says, if anyone ever asks you a shaila, what to do, they ask you, what is the halacha? Even though you know 100% there's no way they're ever going to listen to the halacha, they're never going to observe that halacha right now, you still tell them. Because if they ask you to represent to them what Torah has to say, then you have to tell them what the Torah has to say about an issue. You can't misrepresent the Torah. If they don't ask, you don't necessarily have to stop them if you know that stopping them won't help. That's Mutav Shiyushogig. But if they ask you what the Torah says, this was a major issue with Rabbanut in Eretz Yisrael. There was Rabbanut required Chasan Kala classes. So people who were living together, who were pure chilonim, were violating everything, but they had to take, in order to get a marriage license, they had to take Chasan Kala classes. So some of the teachers, the Chasan Kala teachers said, what's the point? What am I going to teach them all of Hilchas Nida? It's a waste of time. So they would teach them 40% of Hilchas Nida, 50% of Hilchas Nida. And very often what happened was, 15, 20 years later, the chilonim that learned, the Chasan, they became Balei Tshuva. And they said, one thing I know that I don't need to learn again is Hilchos Nida. And they would observe 40% of Hilchos Nida. And so that's a big problem. When you're asked to represent what the halacha is and what the Torah has to say, you have to say what the halacha is and what the Torah really has to say about something. You can't just misrepresent. Yeah.
Don't we always have by Doraisas anyway? And this is the last 40 aren't really Doraisas.
Do say what? About Mutav Shiyushogig?
Right. We don't want people to do Doraisa things bemaze it, and that's why we don't tell them. But people that Darabonim bemaze it, it's better to tell them.
I'm not sure. Okay. Good. So when it comes to the brachos, if the tokeh was already yotzei the bracha, let's say he was already yotzei shofar, rather, he already blew and he's just blowing for someone else, doing a favor. So the Ramah says he should still make the brachos himself. Mishra Brewer points out that according to many poskim, if the listener can make the bracha, then the listener should make the bracha lishma kol shofar. Because why should the tokeh make a bracha that he's not even chayv in the mitzvah anymore? He's already done the mitzvah. If you're going to blow shofar for women, sometimes they have a separate tkiah after davening or whatever, let's say. Woman just had a baby, can't get out of the house, so someone goes over to her house to blow the shofar for her. So the Ramah writes in Tavkuf Pei Tesiv Zayin that when you blow exclusively for women, you should not make the bracha. Rather, if they're Ashkenazic women, they should make the bracha for themselves. And if they're Ashkenazi women make brachas on mitzvah shazman grama, even though they're pater, we discussed that recently in Shir, that even though Vitzivanu doesn't seem appropriate, Tosfos points out Vitzivanu is really going on all of Klal Yisrael, not on the individual per se, and therefore it's okay for women to say Vitzivanu, but Sephardic women have the practice of not making a bracha on mitzvah seishazman grama, even when they're going to volunteer the mitzvah. They follow the Shitas HaRambam that you can't make a bracha on a mitzvah seishazman grama, either because the bracha was not instituted for a voluntary mitzvah, or because the word Vitzivanu is a problematic word in the bracha. And therefore, if you're blowing for a Sephardic woman, and you've already been yotzei, so there's no bracha recited at all. Blowing shofar for sick people, Mishmur points out, ideally it should be done after 3 hours of the day, because the Midas Hadin is strongest during the first 3 hours of the day, and you don't want to bring on the Midas Hadin to the sick person at that time. So if you're able to schedule it where you could blow the shofar for them a little later in the day, that's better than blowing it earlier in the day. But obviously if you can't, it's better that they do the mitzvah d'oraisa than that they not do the mitzvah d'oraisa, and therefore you do it whenever you can. If the Baal Tokea runs out of gas in middle, he's unable to complete the tekiyos, someone else may take over without saying a new bracha, because again, the original bracha that was said was for everybody, so everybody was included in that bracha already, so you don't need a new bracha when someone else takes over. Now let's get to actual tekiyah shofar. Those were the brachos. Shulchan Aruch Tavkuf Pehesef Al says a person should stand during the tekiyos and during the brachos. The iser to sit includes an iser to lean on anything that if you would take it away, it would cause you to fall. So you can touch it, but if you're putting all your weight on something, so that is the same din as sitting. The listen, because that's always a diyun in the poskim. What's the chiyuv to stand? Is it a din in amida per se, or a din in kavod? Right, a din in showing kavod. So if you're standing in a way where you're putting your weight on something, it may be that you're showing the proper kavod, even though it's not amida per se. But nevertheless, Shulchan Aruch seems to assume leaning is no good. The listeners don't have to stand, but the Mishnah Berurah points out that our custom is to stand, that even when we're listening to Tekiyah Shofar, we stand. The Ikar Adin is really that the Tokeah, he's the one that needs to stand and not to lean on something. The Ramah says that the Baal Tokeah should stand by the Bima, and the Mishnah Berurah says that the reason is that he wants to demonstrate that the merit of Torah, the place where they read the Torah from, because after all, Baal Tokeah could, why can't he blow the shofar from his seat? It's plenty loud. Everyone should be able to hear. Where's he got to go to the Bima for? But no, that's our minhag to show, to indicate, Mishnah Berurah explains, that the zchus of Torah should help our tekiyos, which are a form of tefillah, in order to be accepted. The position of the shofar itself, Ramah writes in Tavkuf Pehesef Beis that the shofar should be on the right side of the mouth. And the Ramah, and there are three reasons that are offered for this. Ramah gives two, and Bir Alacha quotes a third. Number one, because the satan stands to the right of the person to prosecute, so you want to sort of like deafen him. Number two, the tefillin are worn on the other side, and this way we're already protected on the left side, so we need additional protection on the right side. So if that reason is correct, then a person who's a lefty who wears tefillin on his right hand should really put the shofar on the left side. But the Mishnah Berurah says not that way. The Mishnah Berurah says even the lefty blows shofar from the right side of his mouth, that you blow on the right side. Bir Alacha quotes from a Meir Simcha, quotes from the Meshech Chachma, that since we learn the halachas of shofar from the chatzotros that were used for war, and the pasuk says ve'yachziku biyad smola b'lapidim biyad yaminim ha'shofros l'tkoa, we see that they held it in the right hand, and therefore we should use the right hand. If in halicha shlomo, very interestingly, he says, why do I need any of these reasons? Isn't it obvious why you do it with the right hand? The halacha by everything. By all mitzvos is that all mitzvos are done on the right side. By every mitzvah, we always do everything with the right hand. So what do I need a special limur, special reasons to tell me to dafka do this with the right hand? So he writes, he says we always pask in yamin adif. We always pask in that the right hand is better. So he says that the reason we need a special reasons over here is that when do we say yamin is adif? When you have a choice, do something with your right hand or your left hand. When you have two units, there's a right side, a right and a left. So to do it with the right hand, yamin adif. But when you're dealing with something that doesn't have a very clear right and left, it's really just one unit. You have one mouth. You have two hands. You have one mouth. There's a right side of the mouth and left side of the mouth, but it's really just one mouth. So Shlomo Zalman thought that that's the reason that that we need all these other reasons, that you wouldn't say Yamin Adif when you have one unit. And that's why, let's say Ben Atilis Yedayim, right hand first, because that's the more chashuv. Right, because those are two hands. But anything that's not nikr b'fnei atzmo, anything that's its own separate, it's a single aver, but it's not nikr b'fnei atzmo, it's having a right or a left. You wouldn't say that. So when it comes to holding the shofar, definitely in your right hand, because that's an issue of the hand. But when it comes to the mouth, so that's why we have all of these other reasons that we do it. Rav Shlomo Zalman passes against the Mishnah Berurah. He says that a lefty should put the shofar on the left side of his mouth, even if he's only blowing to be motzi righties. You have a shul full of righties, and the tokeh is a lefty. He says that he should do it on the left side of his mouth. He thinks that the ikar is in the tokea. It's not Talia and everybody else, even though they too are getting the mitzvah. Furthermore, the Rama writes that the shofar should face up, because the pasuk says Allah Elokim Betruah. So we face the shofar up when we blow, we don't face the shofar down. The custom is that we cover the shofar while we say the brachos, so that the bracha, it should be evident that the bracha is not on the chefza of the shofar itself, but rather on the kol. It's a bracha l'shmo kol shofar. It's on the noise that comes from the shofar. That's what the Avnei Nezer writes in Siman Taf Lamed Aleph. Also, in between tekiyos, we cover the shofar. That's based on Kabbalistic reasons, but we do that as well. The Sidur Yaivitz, Rabbi Yaakov Emden, points out that the shofar should be held when it is under the cloth and you're making the brachas, you should hold on to it, because in general, when you make a brachas mitzvah, you should be holding on to the item so that it will be done over las yas and it will be immediate. So even though it's under a cloth, the toke, you'll notice, hopefully is holding it probably underneath the cloth. He's holding it with his hand underneath the cloth. So that's the minhag in terms of the brachas. The Ramban, Siman Tavkuf Pei Hei Sif Dalet, says that it's appropriate to have a person call out each of the tekiyos. To let the person know, Tkia, Shvarim, Trua, Tkia, what he's going to blow next. Mishbura says that the person appointed for that task should know the halachos of shofar, because that person is also going to be the person that's going to determine when it wasn't a kosher sound and tell him to go back and do it again. And it's not so posh. You need to know when he just has to do that sound again versus when he needs to go back to the beginning of the line, right? If, let's say, he messes up a Trua. You have to know when he just needs to redo the Trua and when he needs to go back and redo the Tkia that came before the Trua also. So it's important to know these halachos, so the person doing this should be someone who is knowledgeable. Usually it's the rabbi. Usually the rabbi of the shul is the one that ends up with that job. In the Luach Eretz Yisrael, Rabbi Chil Michal Tukachinsky writes that the Makri should call the first tekiah of each set in a way that's evident that it's the first and not the last tekiah. Meaning it can be very confusing for the tokea. He's not going to, and also for the people in the shul, they may not be following along exactly which is which. So it should be tekiah for the first one and tekiah, you know, it should be for the last one in the set, so that he can realize which is the first, which is the last, just by the tone that is being used. Fine. There is a major discussion whether a person is allowed to accept money to be a Baal Tokeya or a Shliach Zibur. Shulchan Aruch and Siman Shin Vav Sif Hei says that a person can't accept money to be a Shliach Zibur on Shabbos because it's a violation of Schar Shabbos. Based on that, Shulchan Aruch Tavkuf Pei Hei Sif Hei says you shouldn't accept money to daven or blow shofar, and if you do, you're not going to see a Siman Bracha from that money. So what does every single shul do that hires a chazan that pays people to daven? So the Shulchan Aruch quotes Yesh Omrim and Siman Shin Vav that you're allowed to accept money for davening, that it's mutter to accept money for davening on Shabbos because Litzorich Mitzvah it's permissible. So a lot of the Achronim rely on that shita, that Litzorich Mitzvah, it's permissible. The Brisker Rav, they say, in Shuvas Van Hagos, in Chelek Beis, in Reish Ayin Tes, says the Brisker Rav was very makbid to dafka have a shatz who was paid, because he wanted to make sure that the guy took it seriously. And you know, if a person is being paid for a job, he's much more likely to take it seriously. However, the Mishnah Berurah says that even according to that shita, you're still not going to see a Siman Bracha for the money. I mean, it could be that you'll take it more seriously, it's not going to help you see a Siman Bracha for the money. Mishnah Berurah says that ideally, the way to get around this problem is something called Schar Shabbos Bahavla'a, that if a person is paid for something he does during the week also, and not just for Shabbos, so then you can pay him. So if you give him a job to do during the week, Shlomo Zalman says, doesn't mean let him daven mincha on Tuesday. It means he has to daven something that would normally get you paid, meaning that you would normally get paid for, such as the first slichos on Matzai Shabbos. That's usually a big deal. Everyone comes out. It's a big night for chazanim. That's how the minhag developed. It's a huge night for chazanim. There are chazan concerts all over the place on the first night of slichos, and they go for three hours singing the slichos, because that's the idea. That's how they make it, that they're allowed to get paid over the course of Yantif. The sound of the shofar, Shulchan Aruch Paskins, any sound, regardless of how deep or high pitched it is good for the mitzvah of shofar. So even if it sounds like a wimpy shofar sound, as long as it fulfills the requirement of being the right length, etc., that is okay. What if it changes right in the middle? Sometimes it starts out at a certain tone and then it just, you know, jumps a pitch or jumps down a pitch. So Rosh Shlomo Zalman and the Stipler and the Chazanish and most poskim say that it's an afana gemara that the pitch doesn't matter on the shofar. So they just point out, why should it make a difference if the pitch doesn't matter l'chadchilo, or if in the middle it switches pitch, it should all be the same. It doesn't make a difference, and therefore, even if it switches in the middle, it's still a perfectly valid, as Rosh Hashanah held, kosher l'chadchila, tekiya. A chumra bialma, if you want to be choshish, he said, for the sheet of the Maril Diskin. That Rabbi Shulam Diskin had a chumra that when the pitch changes in the middle, that it's considered a separate tekiya, and therefore it's considered that the original tekiya may have been cut short, and it could cause problems. And that would invalidate a tekiya. But a shvarim or a trua, where the blasts are very short anyway, l'chara wouldn't be invalidated anyhow. But a tekiya, at least, that it would invalidate a tekiya according to Maril Diskin. But again, we assume, I think, like Rosh Hashanah Zalman, like the Stipler, like the Chazon Ish, they were very religious Jews, and they assumed that that's only a chumra bialma, that we don't have to be makbid for this. It's good to know the halachas of tekiya shvarim, just to know when, you know, what the rabbi's thinking when he makes the guy go back during the tekiyos. Mishabur and Tavkuf Pei Zayin Sif Gimel. Sifkan Gimel writes that a person should always refrain to the extent possible from coughing or clearing your throat during the actual tekiyos, because you don't want to be distracted from listening to the tekiyos. You're supposed to be listening to the sounds of the tekiyos. He says you shouldn't have, ideally, if you could avoid having young children that would distract you or make noise in the shul during the tekiyos. That's why usually they try to bring in the kids at the end, you know, when they when they're blowing those last several tekiyos. So, but again, if you could, children should only be brought to shul to the extent that they're able to behave and stay quiet, and for as long as they're able to behave and stay quiet, and not for longer. Who can blow the shofar? Shulchan Aruch Sim Tavkuf Pei Tes Sif Alef says anybody who's chayiv in the mitzvah of tekiyah shofar can blow for other people as well. If you're not chayiv, you cannot blow for other people. Now, if you volunteer the mitzvah, you're an eino mitzvah v'yosa, and that's what our minig is that women do. As we said before, Shulchan Aruch and Sim Tavkuf Tzadi Sif Alef and Beis, person needs to blow Mei Ikra Din really only Tarat Gimel Pa'amim. Three times tekiya trua tekiya, because the word trua appears in the Torah three times. However, since we don't know what a trua is, whether it's a shvarim, a trua, or a shvarim trua, so we blow tashat three times, tarat three times, tashrat three times. We do each of them three times. It's not just sufficient to blow tashrat three times, because if the real chiyuv is a shvarim, then the trua is a hefsik. And if the real chiyuv is a trua, then the shvarim is a hefsik. If someone is blowing shofar for many people consecutively in a hospital, going from room to room to blow the shofar, so the Kaf HaChaim says that really you should blow 30 kolos for each and every person that you're going to blow for. However, if Haigon is quoted by many Rishonim as saying that that's not really necessary. The Ikra Adin is really only 9 kolos. And really, Ikra Adin, all of the versions of what a trua is are kosher. They all work. It's not that according to that if different shuls have different minhagim, that it's not going to be kosher. They're all kosher. So if it's going to, you're going to be going around all day in a hospital, so certainly it makes sense to not have to trouble yourself to blow 30 colors for each person. You just blow 10 for each person. That's going to be good enough. If you have to leave, I perfectly understand. If we have two or three guys that want to stay, that's fine. Just want to try to get through some more halachos if possible. So Don't be embarrassed to leave. If I'm sitting here all alone, so then I'll stop talking. Okay, what do a shvarim and a trua sound like? What is the proper sound of a shvarim and a trua? Achsiv achsim tova. Whoever's got to go, take care. We'll see you next week. The minag of Russia and Lita and most Ashkenazic kihilos is that a shvarim. The minhag of certain communities, not most Ashkenazic communities, but of certain communities, is that a shvarim is two quick blasts that are broken up by a change in tone. It's it's not just it's right? It's with a chain, with a knetch in the middle. And that ensures, the reason they have that minhag possibly is to ensure that the shvarim is long enough. Because you need enough time to have the dip and the jump, right? You need enough time to do that within each shvarim. It's very difficult to measure shvarim, so that sort of guarantees it. The minhag of Hasidim from Poland, Hungary, is just three straight short blasts. That seems to be the minhag of most shuls, most of our shuls, at least nowadays. A trua, the custom in almost all communities, is that a trua is 9 very short straight blasts that are separated by a break. It's right. It's clearly separated from each other. The minhag of Temanim, though, is that a trua is really one long blast that goes up and down 9 times. It's right. It just goes up and down, up and down. What if you're in a shul where the guy blowing the shofar doesn't know how to, he doesn't split them. It's a sound that it goes up and down, up and down, up and down. Are you yotze? So definitely. The halacha Rosh Hashanah Zalman said that absolutely you yotze, and that he was once in a shul where they wanted to pull a Parsha Zachar, where they wanted to say, just like Parsha Zachar, where you read it 500 times in all the different ways that you could read it. I remember in Karen B'Yavne they read Parsha Zachar, I don't know, 10 times, 7 times, some obscene number. And the only way they didn't read it was the way normal Americans, you know, pronounce Hebrew. That they didn't do. But anyway, so it says Rosh Hashanah was in such a shul, and they said, okay, now we're going to blow shofar after davening 30 kolos kaminak atemanim, and then we're going to blow 30 kolos kaminak this and kaminak that, and he just walked out. You know, that's. But then they said once he heard that they were doing the temanim minak first, he stayed for that one. Because he thought, I don't know, it doesn't say why, it just says what he did. I don't know, maybe he had to tie his shoes. It doesn't tell you why he did it, but that's what he did. That for the Temani one, he thought it was kedai to stay for it, apparently. Okay, how long does each blast have to be? So the first opinion of Shulchan Aruch says that a trua should be, the full trua should be the length of 3 short blasts, and the second opinion of Shulchan Aruch says that the full trua altogether should be the length of 9 short blasts. That it's either tu-tu-tu or 9, right? I'm not going to sit here doing the sound effects for you. The shvarim, according to one opinion of Shulchan Aruch, each shever can't be longer than 2 short blasts, because then it would be the same thing as a tekiya. According to the second opinion, it could be the length of up to the length of 3 short blasts, because then you're still safe from tekiya territory. A tekiya should be as long as the blast blown in the middle, meaning if you're blowing a shvarim, so the tekiya should last as long as it takes to blow the shvarim. If you're blowing a shvarim trua, the tekiya is going to have to be twice as long. It's going to have to be as long as the shvarim trua together. Now, b'dieved, if it's just as long as one of them, then it's fine. So what this translates into usually, even though the post can talk in terms of how long blasts are, but blasts aren't the same as seconds. Usually what it translates into is a tekiya should be 2 full seconds, and a tekiya on a shvarim trua should be 4 full seconds. So that's why sometimes you'll notice that if a tekiya is not long enough, a rabbi might make someone go back. Now, in between the sounds of a trua or a shvarim, let's say between the beeps of a trua or between the breaks of a shvarim, just 1 second, Shulchan Aruch says in Sifdal, you should not breathe. It should be one breath. The shvarim should be in one breath, the trua should be in one breath. And if you do take a breath in the middle, it passes it. It passes that you have to start that one again. In between a shvarim and a trua of tashrat, Shulchan Aruch quotes 2 deos, whether they have to be in one breath or not in one breath. And the Mechaber writes that in order to fulfill all the opinions, by the tekiyos to miyushav, you should do it one way, tekiyos to mu'uma, do it the other way. So Bali Tokeh know this, or should know this, many have this minhag, that tekiyos to mu'uma, tekiyos to miyushav, some they take a breath between the shvarim and trua, and others they don't take a breath between the shvarim and the trua. Shaar Tzion says, even though this is the sheet of the Mechaber, not the sheet of the Ramah, he likes it, thinks it's a good idea, and that's what we should do. The Ramah doesn't say that way. The Ramah says we should always do it in 2 breaths, and just be careful not to pause for longer than it takes to take a breath, right? But it should be done in 2 breaths. Not always so easy to do. So the Mishnah Berurah points out, that's why when we are calling out, the Makri, who's calling out the Shvarim Trua, should call it out at one shot. Shvarim Trua, right? You should call it out together, so because if you have to break to call it out again, that's going to be too long of a break in between the Shvarim and the Trua. Question? Yeah, the Tekiyah before and after the Shvarim Trua. Right, those are long, but the tekiya for the shvarim alone, or the tekiya for the trua alone, would only be. That's what Rav Dov Weimiger told me that his minhag is 2 full seconds. How do you define neshima achas exactly? So the Avnei Nezer in Taf Mem Dalet and the Chaznish Kof Lamed Vav Aleph says neshima achas means that you don't pause at all in between; it just goes straight. However, the Mishnah Berurah and the Shulchan Aruch Rav say that if you pause for a very brief moment, as long as it's less than the time that it would take to take a full breath, that would still be called neshima achas, and that's perfectly permissible and even recommended l'chadchila. When do you have to go back and repeat a tekiya? So in order not to have to go back to the beginning of the line, and just to repeat that tekiya that you messed up, you need 2 conditions to be met. If either of these conditions are not met, you need to go back to the beginning of the line and not just to the blast that you messed up. One condition is it has to be that you were trying to do the right type of sound. Meaning if you called out trua and for whatever reason you just decided to do a tekiya, the tokeya decided to do a tekiya, then he's definitely going to have to go back to the beginning of the line. If the other condition is, if what came out was not a valid call of any kind according to any posik, right? If it was just pff, right? Then he doesn't have to go back. But if what came out might have been a valid, he was trying to blow a trua, he was trying to blow, let's say, a trua, and somehow he came out with 3 short ones, which may be a borderline shvarim, or he blew too long on the truer, may have sounded like tkiyah, then he's going to have to go back to the beginning of the line. So again, this is where you got a halt cup if you're a makri to know these things. If you're not sure whether it was kosher or not, so on the first day where it's daraisa, the first 30 kolas at least, which is daraisa, so we're machmir. But the later tkiyos of the first day, the last 70 on the first day, and the last and all of the ones on the second day, is any sort of suffix, we're going to be makel. By Musaf, the Rama writes in some Tavkuf Tzadi Aleph Siv Zayin, there's a minhag to say Aleinu in middle of Musaf. During the silent Shemon Esrei, in order to distinguish between the bowing that we do as a chiyuv and the bowing we do customarily at Aleinu, we bow a little less than usual during the silent Shemon Esrei at Va'anachnu Korim than we would bow during the places where we're chayiv to bow. However, during Chazar Sashatz, the minhag is that we bow on the floor when the Chazan reaches Va'anachnu Korim. The Shulchan Aruch paskins that a person is not allowed to bow on a stone floor, and the people have the custom not to bow directly on any floor, even if there's carpet or whatever, even if it's not made out of stone, and instead to put something in between yourself and the floor. You should realize the Isser is not the knees so much, it's more the face. The face shouldn't be without anything being mafsik. So a lot of times people just put like tissues down by their knees, and they put the face on the floor. It's really not, you should put by both, right? But where you have one of those, sometimes yeshiva send out, you know, before Rosh Hashanah, one of those cloth, special cloth that you can put down, where it has room for your knees and for your face all on the cloth. But it should really be put by your face, not necessarily by your knees. That's what the stipler writes. It says B'shem the stipler in Archos Rabbeinu, page Kufpe Beis. It's also best not to use a newspaper because we're concerned that you're going to rip letters, things like that. You don't want to get involved in shilas of halacha. So better just to use something that's more sturdy, or to use tissues or something like that. The Mishnah Berurah Tavkuf Tzadi Beis of Katan Aleph says that there's a minhag to blow during the silent Shemon Esrei as well, but he does not recommend that minhag. He says that you should finish the 100 kolos after davening, not to blow any tekiyos during the silent Shemon Esrei. In many Nusuch Sfarad shuls, they blow during the silent Shemon Esrei. For some reason, in the Young Israel in Cedarhurst, they blow during the silent Shemon Esrei, even though it's not in the Nusuch Sfarad shul. And I think the minhag of Rav Soloveitchik in his minyan in Boston also, he was makir that they would blow during the silent Shemon Esrei. It's quoted in many Rishonim. The Manig, the Aruch quote this minhag, and the Shulchan Kodesh writes that it seems to be based on Kabbalah. Whatever it is, the problems with the custom, Mishnah Berurah says, if you hear a shofar in the middle of the silent Shemon Esrei, it could be very confusing when you're trying to daven Shemon Esrei, and could mess you up in the middle of the silent Shemon Esrei. The Avnei Nezer writes in Siman Taf Mem He and Taf Mem Vav that Kabbalistically speaking, this has some tremendous sowed behind it, and it's not really meant for the young and ignorant, and you really need to know what this means in order to do it, etc., etc. So, the Baal Shem Tov and the Arizal blew during the silent Shemon Esrei. The Avnei Nezer says he also himself blew during the silent Shemon Esrei because only because he didn't want to change the custom of his Rebbeim. But really, he felt that the more proper minhag is not to. If you do have this custom, so it's important to realize, if you're davening slower than the rest of the shul and you're not up to the tekiyos when they blow, stop whatever you're doing and listen. You're supposed to be able to listen to the tekiyos. Rav Shechter said, but ideally, you should try to keep up with them so that you'll be up to what they're up to when they're. You don't have to be the firmest guy in the world. You can, really, it should be El Seder Abrachos. The Tekiyos L'Chadchila should be El Seder Abrachos, so you should try to keep up. If you're davening faster than the shul, don't go ahead. You should wait for them to get up to those Tekiyos. The brachos on the shofar go on all of the shofar blasts, and therefore Shulchan Aruch Tavkuf Tzadi Beisif Gimel says that a person should not talk from the time that you make the bracha until after the last tekiya. If you did speak, as long as the first tekiya was already blown, then you don't have to go over and make the bracha again. The Ramah says that the tefilos that we say in middle of all the piyutim we throw into Shemon Esrei and all the other things that we say, Baruch Hu Baruch Shemos, like Shlomo Zalman Aruch is talking about, are not a hefsek. However, Mishnah Berurah points out that you should not say even tefilos during the first 30 kolos. So even though it's printed in the Machzor, it's interesting, many of the Machzorim have printed a little tefillah in the middle of the 30 kolos, and it says, don't say this. You're not supposed to say it until after you get through those 30 kolos. There's a big shaila, you have to go to the bathroom middle of Shemon Esrei, middle of Musaf, let's say, middle of Chazar Shat. So do you say Asher Yatzar? So the Shita of the Marsham is that the Yisra of talking during Tekiyah Shofar is equivalent to the Yisra of talking during Birchus Kriya Shema, and therefore you don't even say Asher Yatzar. Asher Yatzar you don't say during Birchus Kriya Shema either. If you look at Mishmur Sim Samach Vav Sivkan Chav Gimel, says that Lagabi Birchus Kriya Shema. Most poskim assume though that it's the equivalent of the Yisra to speak between Baruch Shamar and Yishtabach, and therefore you are allowed to say Asher Yatzar, especially since the davening is so long long that you're likely to miss the Asher Yatzar completely if you don't say it during the davening. In terms of learning Torah, during the actual saying of the Malchus, the Chronos, and the Shofros by the Shliach Tzibur, you're supposed to listen to every word of the Pesukim of the Malchus, the Chronos, and Shofros. But when you're waiting for Chazaras Shatz to begin, let's say the rabbi davens along with Shemona Esrei, and it's going to be 15 minutes before they start Chazaras Shatz, then certainly you're allowed to learn Behirhur during that time. You just shouldn't mouth the words, lest it become a hefsit. But to scan the sefer with your eyes or something like that would be okay. So this was a quick review of the basic halachas of Rosh Hashanah. We should all be zochah to observe these halachas properly on Rosh Hashanah and to observe all the other halachas during the rest of the year, and through that be zochah to, again, a ksiva v'chasima tova.